You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning, listeners. You are listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. We're coming to you live from the 3CR station, and you're tuning into the 855 AM frequency on your dial. Thank you for joining us today. Before we begin, 3CR and Green Left would like to recognise that we are broadcasting from the land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people, the original owners of the land. This is land that was stolen, it was taken by brutal force, and land was never ceded. And yeah, we never forget that Australia was really built on the dispossession, the racist dispossession and displacement of its first peoples. And we recognise that this attempted genocide is ongoing. And as socialists, we continue to actively support decolonisation, and we continue to stand with all First Peoples in their struggle for justice. And I meant to say good morning to my co-presenters, Mary and Zane. Good morning.
Good morning.
Top of the morning to you.
we've got a very good program planned for you this morning. So we'll be going into some headline news to begin with. And then we're going to be playing an interview. It's a pre-recorded interview done recently about why you should boycott Caltex. So Palestine solidarity activists are going to converge across the country to boycott Caltex. They actually did it a couple of months ago. But yeah, it's a bit of a longer interview. We're going to play that at around 7:15. And then we are going to speak to an activist from South Australia, Renfrey Clark, and we're going to be talking to him about the South Australia's marine disaster. So people might have already heard a little bit about the sort of concentrated the algal bloom that's been happening off the coastal waters. So that'll be an interesting conversation to have with him at 8:10. And yeah, we'll be playing some tunes and discussing more news from the pages of Green Left. But yeah, before we get into the news headlines, how are you? How are both of you this morning?
Could have had a bit more sleep, but apart from that, I'm okay.
That is
insane.
A very... I don't have my words with me this morning, but I have a lot of... I'm feeling those vibes also.
Sleep deprivation, right?
Yeah, it's just the old Friday brekkie. It's just that little bit earlier than normal for me.
Yeah.
Some construction workers get up and they always start at 7. And I used to do that. I used to have 6 o'clock starts, which was just the most god-awful, horrendous thing.
So you'd have to wake up at 4 then, 4:30-ish.
Yeah.
Well, I used to work on the railways in New South Wales, and so we'd have shifts, you know, really, really early. So you'd be getting up at 3 a.m. or something like that. So, yeah.
Jeez. What were you doing on the railways?
I was a station assistant at Wynyard for many years.
I never knew that.
Oh, cool.
No, you were a teacher your whole life.
No, and I've been I was a forklift driver before that at General Motors Holden when they still existed at Fisherman's Bend. So
you still have your forklift license?
I still have it, but I don't know if it's valid still. It does last for a long time. It's a very easy driver's license to get.
Really?
Yeah, but it was funny. When I first started, I started in this area where it was mostly older migrant men, and they'd never seen a woman drive a forklift before. And a forklift is easier to drive than a car, right? It's really easy. But
it looks, people make it look hard, though. When they bump into things,
they're probably not properly trained or forgot their training, because they shouldn't be bumping into things.
Mm. Or they're just being macho dickheads and like being like, "Oh, gee, this is real tough. Oh, look at that wheel turn around." Ooh.
Like I've just heard of so many workplace accidents involving forklifts, so I don't think it's as easy as you're making it out to be, Mary.
Yeah, no. You just got to follow the rules. You know, and one of the basic ones is your forks have to be down when driving. And I've seen lots of forklift drivers with their forks up.
Mm.
And that is really dangerous.
It really is. Yeah, I've seen some sickening videos just come up in my feed of horrible forklift accidents. Like someone's just sitting there in a forklift scrolling on their phone while sitting at the wheel. Yeah. The tines are halfway up. And then someone rides past on a motor scooter or something and just like absolutely gets cleaned up. I'm curious, Mary.
Mm.
Were you part of the turn to industry?
Yes, I was.
All right, so for lefty train spotters, the Socialist Workers Party back in the, what was this, like the late 70s, early 80s?
Something like that, yeah.
There was this sort of directive from the party that was like, all right, the way we're going to like kickstart the revolution is we've got to get all our comrades to get blue collar jobs.
Oh, I think I remember this.
And into basic industry.
I mean, I don't remember it, but I know about it. Yeah, keep going.
And that's how we're going to, you know, get our very switched on revolutionary minded comrades into the blue collar unions, and then we're going to have more clout and we'll be able to, you know.
Well, they were really seen as the radical central unions, and they were, you know, in those days. So there was a logic to it. It was just, I think, what's the word, too soon to expect, you know, a few lefties in important unions to be kickstarting the revolution in Australia. But the idea was to embed socialists in unions to support militant actions, to build confidence in workers, to empower them. So, you know, even that logic is not so insane. And the idea is that you would stay there for you, like you would, that's what you would do for years and years and years. We were too small, really, to make that work, I think. And then there are all sorts of objective factors that meant that it wasn't going to happen as well. That is a long story.
It really is. But one of the, I don't know, like one of the big, like, iconic strikes of the 80s was the nurses' strike.
Oh, yes, and we were involved in that.
Yeah, but I guess that just points a little bit to the, maybe part of the flaw in the logic of the turn to industry somewhat insofar as, like, you know, feminized industries, teachers, nurses, I think, you know, at university, the NTU, like they still have a really important role to play. I think, like, as a construction worker from the mighty CFMEU, I think sometimes, like,
but if you look at some of the leaderships of the, like, especially the teachers' union today, my criticism is that they do not mobilise or organise the teachers. They have, ever since I was a teacher, you know, over 40 years ago, every single EBA, we were sold out. And so lots of members left the union. Lots of new teachers see no reason to join the union, which I can understand because you get sold out. So, trying to get radicals into unions instead of just into academic jobs, for example, I think is a good thing. But look, this is a long conversation, and I don't know if we should be talking about it this morning because
I think it's good to riff on these things a little bit sometimes.
I agree. And I don't regret having gone into basic industry. I don't regret at all being a forklift driver or a station assistant. Those experiences were so interesting, and I met such lovely people, became friends with lots of people I wouldn't have. And the experience working on the job in those areas was really invaluable as well. So,
and I think you've helped do your bit with visibility as well, in terms of, you know, normalising women working in these jobs, because just so prevalent in some of those more male-dominated blue-collar jobs. That it's a bloke's job and only blokes can do this. Well, it's just such garbage, though.
And if I can tell you just a little funny story. So when I started working at GMH, I was put in this area, as I said, which was I and one of the cleaners were the only two women in that particular area. All the rest were males, right? And so I was put in this office because I was the forklift driver with another guy who was my supervisor. And in his office, there were pictures of naked women everywhere.
Oh, my God.
So I thought, how am I going to combat this? I tried to have conversations with him. He was very friendly and, you know, he wasn't objectionable. So in those days, we had that magazine called Clio with the naked male centerfold. So I brought my naked centerfolds in and stuck them up, and he was horrified. So we both took our pictures off the wall after that. We agreed that that's what we should do.
That is brilliant. That is tactical genius.
Well, you know, you got to think, how can I do this in a transitional way, not an aggressive way that will get
nowhere.
That
was passive aggressive, Mary, but it was funny.
It worked.
I like it. No, because you needed to show them what it feels like when the shoe is on the other foot.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if it would always work, but anyway, it worked in that instance. Yeah, but
speaking of the union movement, there was a big. Well, we are happy to report that there was a large union meeting that recently endorsed the upcoming August 24th National Day of Action for Palestine. So this Sunday, march with your union contingents. Isn't that right, Zane? You probably, I'm not sure if all of us, well, I know I'm going to be there, but if you're active in your union, come to the rally, or even if you're not active, come to the rally this Sunday. It's going to be a big one. We're hoping to get tens of thousands of people to the streets, probably hundreds of thousands across the country.
Mm. I think it's really important to get a good union turnout to this one. There was the Unionists for Palestine initiative, which kind of had some issues, but there's been, you know, a sort of an organised push to try and build up the union response to the genocide. And I think this is a bit of a renewal of that push, and it's coming from a slightly different angle. We had the blockade of the docks, you know, a year and a bit ago. And I think this is really important to try and maximise turnout of unionists, because, I don't know, if there's not that much of a unionist turnout, that's going to let union officials off the hook and let them say, oh, well, there's not that much support. But if there is a good, solid union turnout, this will really push union officials to kind of
do more.
Mm.
On the other hand, it's also a reflection of the union officials, because they should be mobilising their members to come along. Like, you know, the teachers' officials should be sending out flyers or emails, whatever, and agitating, encouraging people. I don't know if they're doing that, because I'm retired now, so I don't know what's happening. But I also know my colleagues are working so hard that they often don't have time to read those things. So you need to be an active union leadership to bring that to the attention of your members, because they're flat out at work and stressed and, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go to a quick break, and then maybe we can come back with some more news on maybe what's a bit about what's happening and some of the developments about what's happening in Palestine. But also people would have heard about the Story Bridge protest in Mianjin, Brisbane, and police and the courts are trying to prevent that from going ahead. So maybe we'll come back with some more news after this quick break. Stay with us.
CR, always bringing you the latest union news.
They're coming after us at the moment. They want to get rid of penalty rates, the big push from businesses. They want to get rid of all the things that you and I have fought for.
So there's tens of thousands of jobs gone, contracted out to sham contracting arrangements.
On 8.55 a.m. and on the web, 3cr.org.au.
This deal really accentuates and is very complementary to the White Australia domestic policy. Here you have not only a white alliance, but an Anglo-Saxon alliance of the ultimate cultural allies of the United States banding together, and the significance that it is aimed at colored peoples, at Asian peoples, at Pacific peoples. This is injecting a horrible racial dimension to this conflict. So I think the US and Australian elites' racist military policies are complementing the increasingly racist domestic policies. So I think, therefore, we really have to look out very, very carefully at this very dangerous synergy between racism on the military front and racism on the domestic front.
Subscribe to 3CR. Where else can you hear radical news, analysis, music, and opinions? Go to 3cr.org.au/subscribe or call the station on 03 9419 8377.
Hello, we are back on Green Left Radio on 3CR. Thanks for tuning in. You're here with me, Chloe, Zane and Mary as your presenters this morning. And yeah, I guess we should mention that it's quite terrifying what's been happening in Palestine. But recently, we know that Israel has begun one of its most barbaric onslaughts, and basically called in 60,000 reservists to launch a full-scale destruction and invasion of Gaza City. That's the most populous area of Gaza. This is why we need to see a massive turnout this Sunday for the nationwide March for Palestine to demand that we stop the genocide, sanction Israel now, and end this two-way arms trade with Israel. But yeah, it's incredibly sad and horrifying. But Palestinians have been rallying, isn't that right? They've been having protests in Gaza City,
demonstrating in Gaza City against the invasion. Apparently, some commentators are saying, I don't know how accurate this is, that they're also raising criticisms of Hamas in saying that Hamas should never have let it get to this stage. You know, and I think that's that's a question that would need to be discussed in detail. But anyway, they are demonstrating. Yes.
And the Palestinians, I mean, we should remember they are actually trapped.
Yes.
They're trapped there. We need to, I mean, I think everyone's eyes are glued to the news, so we won't, you know, repeat what you're already seeing in the news. But solidarity with all those Palestinians, we are thinking of them, and we know all of us here are really, we're constantly organizing to make sure that this government ends its complicity with the genocide of Palestinians.
Yeah, for example, today at 4:30 in Manningham, that's the Doncaster area, there will be a rally in front of Gabriel Nung's office. He's the newly elected Federal Labor MP, and we gave him a chance, but no, he's done nothing, as I expected. So we're rallying out the front of his office. So if anyone lives in that area or would like to join us, 4:30 in Doncaster, just near the Bunnings on that road.
Yeah, that's great, Mary. And also, yeah, if people want to know more about any kind of left-wing events, particularly Palestine, you can go head to greenleft.org.au/events. We cover a lot of yeah, we just cover a lot of the demonstrations that are going to be taking place, even film screenings for Palestine. You can find it all there. And yeah, I guess we should also mention that there's a Story Bridge protest that has been organised in Mianjin, Brisbane, and the police minister has called on the event organisers to respect the decision of the court, because basically the court has said that the pro-Palestinian protest will not be allowed. So the Queensland court has ruled on that. That's very disappointing. But some of the reasons that they're giving is because, it's out of community safety concerns. People will be put at risk. So the police are saying, and they're also, it sounds a bit threatening to me when the police are saying things like, if protesters defy the decision of the court, people will be put at risk. That should really, it's actually the police that will probably be putting people at risk, because if protesters do march across that Story Bridge, what are they going to do? The police are going to come ready with their chemical sprays, with their batons and their guns, and try to intimidate and potentially hurt protesters. This group, Mianjin, Justice for Palestine Mianjin, they have been organizing like over 86 safe, peaceful, family-friendly protests for the last 22 months. So how is this one any different? They're happy to close down the bridge for other public events, like marathons or state-sponsored parades, but it's not okay for people in Mianjin in Brisbane to march against one of the greatest atrocities in human history.
Yep. It shows the hypocrisy, and it also highlights that, they're doing this because they want to shut the voices of pro-Palestinian people down, basically. What do you think, Zane?
I'm just reminded of the lunacy of a couple of weeks back when this massive protest was happening on the Sydney Harbour Bridge. And down here, protesters were going to march across, I forget what that bridge is called in the city.
King's Bridge.
And the cops were like, no, you must not. And so they blocked the bridge and the effect was exactly the same. And it's like, well, what have you achieved out of this other than making yourself look like just complete numpty idiots?
Mm. Riot police. They were riot police.
Mm. And like, I think, that public order and riot team from Victoria Police, I think from what I've heard, that's like self-recruited. And the cops who join that are like all the real super right-wing ones who just want to go and like beat up lefties and spray them in the face and stuff. So, yeah, they would have been loving it. Any time you're at a protest and that public order and riot team comes in, you know that it's like the sludgiest head kickers of the lot. Mm. It's just like clap, clap. Like, you stopped us from blocking the bridge, and the way that you did that was by blocking the bridge. And I'm sure that what happens in Brisbane is going to be exactly the same. There's going to be a whole bunch of cops sitting on the bridge blocking it. And it's like, well, okay, well done. You've stopped the protesters from blocking the bridge by
blocking the bridge. Yes. Yep. Makes sense.
That protest would have been over. Like, we weren't going to block it. We were going to march across it. Mm. So, it gets blocked for a few minutes, but they made it longer than it had to be. They created a big scene. And if anything, like news cameras, it kind of worked to our favor a little bit, because the mainstream media news cameras are there. I know they're trying to make us look bad, but it doesn't matter. We want our protests covered. We want our voices heard. And even if the Murdoch media is going to be there, we still want them there, because they don't cover our protests, have you noticed, in the news, unless the police are there in full force trying to make us look dangerous.
Yeah.
They're children in prams.
Didn't the cops also, maybe I've got this wrong, but didn't the cops in New South Wales, when they had their big, big, huge march across the Sydney Harbour Bridge, didn't they also almost cause a really dangerous situation when they were turning people back just as they had many were coming across the bridge? Remember how that was happening?
So in New South Wales, People marched across the bridge, and I think the first station, once you get from the Sydney City, the Wynyard side,
yes,
over the bridge,
yep,
I think it might be North Sydney Station.
Yeah.
Because there were so many people, there was a safety issue, and they didn't want everyone to flood the station. And I think that was a legitimate safety concern.
Oh, okay.
The issue was the police had no plan B. They'd spent all week trying to argue to get the protest blocked, and what they had not done is literally their job, which should have been to facilitate a peaceful protest and say, all right, what are we going to do if there's 200, 300,000 people? What do we do when everyone gets across the bridge? Because they'd only been focused on blocking the protest, they did not come up with a safety plan, and therefore their only plan, made up on the fly, on the day, was to form a big wall and tell everyone, oh, hey, 300,000 people, sorry, you need to turn around and go back.
Yeah, so you had some people still coming and others turning around because they were told to and had to, and so that could have created a really, dangerous situation.
Meanwhile, there's torrential rain and people have, you know, it's taken them 3 hours to march across and now they've got to turn around and march back.
Yeah.
And the whole thing just took way longer than it needed to and could easily have been avoided if the police had come up with a better plan to say, all right, we're going to triage people once they get to the northern side of the bridge and some of them will go this way and some of them will go, whatever that plan looks like, we're going to have public toilets stationed on the bridge, whatever it is. But they never came up with that plan because they were just singularly focused on crushing people's right to protest.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. And with the Storybridge protest, they're talking about how, like, they're trying to make out, like, well, we're not against protest. We respect your democratic right to protest. It's not about the protest. It's about the route. So they're trying to, I mean, this is the thing. Protests are supposed to be disruptive. What is the point of it if people don't see it, if we do not stop traffic, if there's not some kind of, you know, disruption? They're inherently disruptive. So I don't know. It's the state. They kind of like to say, oh, we support your right to protest, but only if you do it in a way that is silent and out of sight and out of mind. That's the idea of how they want us to protest. I mean, even people who don't march on the streets and say things on social media, like we've got lots of people, you know, even government positions that are making pro-Palestine statements on their personal social media accounts. We've seen this happening with journalists as well, and they get fired. They're becoming a target at work. Doesn't sound like a very democratic, free country to me. Anyway, watch the space for anyone who is living in Mianjin or plans to go to Brisbane for the Storybridge protest. Just keep watching, you know, what the organisers are planning to do. Because I think they're at this point, they're trying to plan their next move. So we don't know. They're just saying to keep an eye on their channels for updates and, more importantly, keep fighting. Real power lies with the people. Stay tuned for more Green Left on 3CR.
We're not meant to have anything nuclear in our country.
It's really important and urgent that Australia get serious about nuclear disarmament.
Well, nobody anywhere on the planet has figured out how to deal with highly radioactive waste.
Most of those who've managed nuclear weapons consider this to be the most dangerous time that we've ever lived in, with the danger of nuclear war at unprecedented levels.
You're listening to Radical Radio 3CR.
You're back listening to Green Left on 3CR, and we're just going to play you a song before our first interview. It's called Scatterlings of Africa. I think I've played it on the show before. It's a 1982 song by the South African band Jaluka, which was founded in 1969 by Johnny Clegg and Sipho Chunu. And they mix Zulu. I really love it because they've mixed Zulu music with influences from rock and Celtic music. And as a multiracial band in apartheid era South Africa, Jaluka frequently did have a lot of trouble with the police. and their songs were banned by state-run radio stations. But their brand of Afropop became very popular. And yeah, this is one of my dad's favorite tunes. So, and it's his birthday today, so I'm going to play it. I hope you enjoy.
Nice.
You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and you were just listening to a song by South African band Juluka, and that was, the song was called Scatterlings of Africa. Yeah, South Africa in the mid-70s was a deeply oppressive society, and apartheid repression was at its height, and with this rigid racial segregation, in law. And Johnny Clegg, he used to, like, he's this white Johannesburg academic. You know, he started to make music with a lot of, like, illiterate black gardeners and, from rural Zululand. And, yeah, it was, in its own way, it was like a radical music statement to go and do that. So, yeah, I really like their music.
Yeah, it was really lovely.
Yeah. All right, well, I think, yeah, we are running a bit late on the show, so I hope listeners don't mind that. We're just running a bit off schedule, but we wanted to play a pre-recorded interview. It's about why you should boycott Caltex. So I'm going to go straight into it. Hope you enjoy.
My name is Riley Breen with Green Left. I'm here today at the National Convergence for Canberra, interviewing Hala and Amin about the Boycott Caltex campaign and the BDS movement. Before we start, I'd like to acknowledge that we're recording on the stolen lands of the Ngunnawal and Ngambri people. Sovereignty was never ceded, and it always was, always will be, Aboriginal land. If you like the work we do, please become a Green Left supporter if you're not already. Plans start from just $5 a month. Begin by asking Hala and Amin about the BDS campaign and the Boycott Caltex campaign in particular.
So Boycott, Divestment and Sanctions is a non-violent action and it's a coalition of Palestinians who have come together to identify targets which have been complicit in the occupation, the ethnic cleansing and the genocide against Palestinians. And so really the criteria of how they measure or how they determine what is a target is complicity versus achievability. We want to make sure that we're identifying targets to companies which are the most complicit, but also which are achievable wins as a movement. And so that's why it's about being targeted and being strategic. So identifying a few very specific, very complicit targets that we can boycott and we can also run divestment campaigns. And from there, we can also hopefully even get sanctions as well against certain states. And so that's the BDS movement. It's all of this is run by the Boycott National Committee, the BNC. And those targets are usually revised. And obviously, they run very targeted campaigns. Within boycotts, we have specific targeted boycotts, which are where we run campaigns against them, and this BNC will actually run campaigns against them. Then there's organic boycotts, which are run, which are targets that the BNC supports, but the general public has run campaigns against them. So the BDS movement will not participate or run specific campaigns, but they will support and having those targets boycotted. And obviously divestments are going to be companies which B2B, business-to-business transactions, is actually to divest and not invest in those specific targets. And so if we talk about boycotts, we're talking about the Chevrons, we're talking about
McDonald's. And I think it's really important to realize that consumer boycotts and then like pressure targets are two different things. A lot of people will be like, you know, you can't use Google, but BDS, the best thing about it strategically, it's really easy to do. So in terms of boycott Caltex, like it's very easy to boycott a Caltex fuel station because you can go anywhere else to get petrol. And so in terms of Chevron and boycott Caltex, Chevron owns Caltex fuel stations in Australia, but actually in America they are Chevron fuel stations, and so the consumer boycott for Chevron in Australia is Caltex, and so it makes the most sense for them to be a consumer boycott because you're not giving your money to Caltex service stations. But it wouldn't make sense in Australia to make Chevron the consumer boycott, because how do you really boycott Chevron and make a difference? And so that would be Caltex, because Chevron owns Caltex and obviously makes money from them.
And you've already covered that a little bit, but there are a few different boycott lists floating around. You see a lot of them on the internet, and some of them are really massive with many, many, many targets. You get those apps you can download that, you know, you take this to the store and you scan different codes. I think for a lot of people, it's hard to make sense of exactly what they should be doing, how much they should be doing, what's actually useful or not. And sometimes it can just be very overwhelming. So how would you say people can try and make sense of how they can actually do the most good?
I would say jump on BDS, like the official BDS Australia, or just the BDS website or Instagram or Facebook, and look at the official list. And for me personally, I say to people, until you have that list done 150% for the consumer boycotts and you're doing a couple of pressure things as well, then look at other things. But that list is not random. It is like the most complicit companies, and that's why it's so important that it's targeted. And when you're doing BDS, like, you're not an individual boycotting something, like, you're part of a like well thought out strategic international campaign. And so we always talk about in activist spaces working as a collective, and our collective power is the best thing that we have. So if everyone, for example, every activist in this continent boycotts Caltex, the amount of financial damage that you can do to Chevron is that, you know, that pressure of then divesting from Israel, because we need to make Israel look like a bad investment. But when we're talking about like a Cadbury bar, which I know a lot of people say, you know, I can't buy like a Cadbury chocolate because it's like linked to Israel. Like, what's the link, and how is it a direct link, and how far is it, and how many people are actually boycotting Cadbury? Because if people, if you're one and like maybe 150 other people, that's not impacting as much as like other targeted boycotts would be, that are actually, you know, it's like, it's a campaign, it's well thought out, it's strategic, it's not random.
It's basically about, and the thing that I think even Palestinians will get confused by is to go back to the fundamental, which is it's complicity, not identity. You know, we're not looking for companies that are Zionist in their name or whatever. We're looking for companies that are most complicit. You know, if we take the example of Cadbury, if people were investing a lot of time and energy saying boycott Cadbury, but except why not take that energy and actually target companies that are directly profiting off the genocide in Palestine, off this, the occupation in Palestine. We talk about Airbnbs and bookings.com, or we talk about Elbit Systems, which is literally selling weaponry throughout the globe by saying it's battle tested against Palestinian children. When we talk about companies that are going, for example, Chevron extracting natural gas resources out of sovereign Palestinian land, and also giving basically 24 hours power and energy to Israel, while Palestinians are denied energy throughout the day. We really should be dedicating our time to the companies that are the most complicit, right? And so this is where I think we always have to direct people back from, you know, boycotting and targeting those gluten-free ice cream cones at Woolies, not really great in terms of winnability when you've got a weapons manufacturer that's literally dropping bombs on Palestinians. So I think it's really about bringing people back to the BDS Australia has nominated and has done its research. It's a coalition of Palestinians. No one's gonna know how to select the companies and target the companies that are most complicit than Palestinians, than the actual victims themselves. So always go back to the BDS framework and the BDS list.
And you talked about the companies on the BDS list being the most complicit. So what exactly is the link of Chevron and Caltex in their complicity? What ties them to Israel, and why are they the target?
Yeah, I could take that one. So Chevron, as had I mentioned, Caltex is a subsidiary of Chevron. And Chevron extracts natural gas, the majority of natural gas, I think it's about 70% of natural gas, of offshores from what is deemed Palestinian sovereign land. And so that natural gas, firstly, generates billions of dollars in revenue. And a lot of that is paid to tax to the Israeli government, which we know that Israel then uses to invest in weaponry and to continue to build settlements, which is illegal under international law and humanitarian law. Pardon me. We know that Chevron also does that natural gas is used to provide resources and power to Israelis and to settlements as well, which are powered 24 hours a day. Meanwhile, Palestinians are denied electricity throughout the day purposely by the Israeli government. So here we have a company that is extracting natural gas. It is profiting a pariah state. It is funding and aiding the settlements and profiting off the building of settlements. Meanwhile, it knows that it's actually denying Palestinians the ability, the basic fundamental human rights in terms of livability.
An argument you often hear from the opponents of BDS is that BDS is equivalent to the Nazis boycotting Jewish businesses in 1930. So just to be clear, is Caltex an Israeli company, or is it owned by Jews at all?
No, BDS is not like Amin touched on at the beginning, it's non-violent. So we're not targeting people for their religion. And Chevron and Caltex, owned by Chevron, is not an Israeli company. Chevron is an American fossil fuel company. And it's crazy to even make the link between Nazis boycotting Jewish businesses and BDS, because that is actual like discrimination of a group of people based on their identity. And that's actually exactly what we're fighting against. So BDS is fighting against companies that are complicit in ethnic cleansing and occupation and apartheid, and at the moment a genocide in Gaza against people just based on the fact that they're Palestinian. And a lot of Jewish individuals and collectives also, you know, a part of BDS campaigns as well. And to conflate Israeli, you know, apartheid and occupation and the state of Israel with Judaism is so crazy of anyone to say that, because genocide, ethnic cleansing, apartheid are not Jewish values. And, you know, Jewish Palestinians exist as well, who are also living under occupation and have been ethnically cleansed as well. And so we're fighting against all of that, and BDS would fight against all of that.
Well, I think an example that's better to compare between BDS and Palestine is actually going to be BDS with South Africa, because that one wasn't based on identity, it was based on complicity. The government was very much putting the people under an apartheid regime where it subjected them to segregation based on basically everything, between the bathrooms, toilets, buses, transport, jobs, and where and accommodation where they lived. The indigenous people of South Africa were physically assaulted. They were denied opportunities. They were denied their land. And really, we saw that as a global movement, BDS was actually pivotal in bringing down the apartheid system in South Africa. So I think, you know, we should move away from identity and focus on complicity, as Hella mentioned. South Africa is an example for us, and it really, at BDS Australia, took inspiration from South Africa, and this is why we are, BDS exists.
And what's your response to the weaponization of claims of anti-Semitism that gets used by Zionists and the political establishment?
Everything's anti-Semitic to them.
Yeah, I think Zionism as a project is the most anti-Semitic project in the world. To Jewish people should be safe everywhere in the world, and to say that Jewish people should have one area in the world where they exist just so they can be safe, but that comes at the cost of the safety of other people. It is not anti-Semitic to say that everyone has the right to self-determination, so long as that doesn't take away the self-determination of other people, which is exactly what's happening. And when I say Zionism is anti-Semitic in itself, it is crazy that this discrimination that was created by white European people, because they didn't want Jewish people in Europe anymore. I mean, we saw the Holocaust. We know that's exactly what they didn't want. They decided to get rid of all of the Jewish people who were living there. And after what they did with the Holocaust, of course, there was no thought of what would then happen to Palestinians and ethnic cleansing. So, yeah, like I said before, genocide, occupation, then none of those things are Jewish values. We have amazing Jewish comrades. We have Jewish Palestinians and Jewish Arabs as a collective as well, who are also very much affected by Israel's existence and Israel's apartheid system and occupation and genocide as well.
BDS targets, none of them are Jewish. And that in of itself should tell you everything. There's nothing anti-Semitic because none of them are Jewish targets. It's not based on identity, it's based on complicity. Elbit Systems is not a Jewish company. It is an Israeli defense company. Airbnb is not a Jewish company. Bookings.com, not a Jewish company. And the list goes on and on and on. Complicity, not identity. They just throw the anti-Semitic trope and excuse around just because it's a weaponization, and it's nothing anti-Semitic about it.
And just more broadly on the weaponization of anti-Semitism, do you have any comments to make on Gillian Siegel and her report that she recently outlined requesting broader powers to clamp down on what she claims is an epidemic of anti-Semitism?
I think she should be more concerned about her husband funding racist and anti-immigrant, anti-Palestinian organisations. I also think, like I said before, everyone has the right to self-determination, but no one has the right to self-determination at the cost of someone else's self-determination. And to do a report that outlines, you know, taking away people's democratic right to protest, taking away freedoms and freedom of speech when we're talking about ending a genocide, ending apartheid systems, ending an occupation, it really, really makes me think, how can this be the anti-Semitism envoy person? But also that there shouldn't be special envoys. We should be ending racism and discrimination as a whole, because it affects everyone.
So her report overall is there to, it really looks like it's there to combat anti-Zionism.
Yeah.
And it's along with anti-Semitism, but really it's about silencing dissent and also just silencing any criticism of Israel, of Zionism, and institutionalizing that within education systems, within media. It is undemocratic. It is completely false. I do not see how it protects Jews by just protecting that, by just protecting any criticism of Israel. It's astounding to me that of all the countries, you can criticize anyone, any place in the world. You can criticize Australia, you can criticize Palestine, but you can't criticize Israel. Just the one state you cannot criticize. And quite frankly, if you are actually putting more effort into protecting discrimination against one people versus all other people, that is not true fight against racism. The fight against discrimination is racism, is to fight against all forms, because all forms are related. They come from the same place. It's a place of hate, and we have to fight all forms of racism. She is only fighting against one form of discrimination, and that is not true fight against discrimination.
Yeah, and on that, I would also say as well that criticizing Saudi Arabia, for example, is not Islamophobic. So why would the criticism of Israel be anti-Semitic? And furthermore, she did not collaborate with a big group of Jewish Australians in this country. So the Jewish Council of Australia was not collaborated with at all, in fact, completely rejected. And how can you keep Jewish people out of the conversation about discrimination that they face?
So how can people be involved in the Boycott Caltex campaign, and what are some practical things they can do to help?
I would say, first and foremost, boycott Caltex. Do not use Caltex fuel stations. Go anywhere else. I don't want to hear people say, oh, but BP's complicit too, when we're talking about, again, boycotting. This is strategic. It's thought out. If you want to do ethical consumption, that's fine, but can't really ethically consume from a fossil fuel company regardless. There's an Instagram page, Boycott Caltex. There's a website, Boycott Caltex. You can go on there. You can take the pledge as an individual or as an organisation that you're not going to support Caltex and thus support Chevron. We also have National Days of Action as well. And our next one is from August 22nd to August 24th. And everyone across so-called Australia, basically in every state, except for where there's no Caltexes, all come together over that period and stand outside and rally outside. So if people can join in to get in touch with their local organisations who's collaborating with them, and to, yeah, keep up with our socials and see when our next National Days of Action are.
That brings us to the end of the Green Left show. Thanks, Hala and Amin, for your time. We'll see you next time.
Capitalism's inherent barbarism is on full display, from the genocide in Gaza and the rise of the far right, to growing militarism and the climate crisis.
We need to radically change the way society is organised.
Join us for the upcoming Eco-Socialism 2025 conference, Eco-Socialism, Not Barbarism, held on September 5th to the 7th at the Balambalam Place in Brunswick.
We will be bringing together activists from across the Indo-Pacific, sharing experiences to resist capitalism's drive to barbarism and build the mass movements that we need.
Anyone who wants to be part of the discussion on how we can build a left-wing alternative is welcome to attend.
Featuring international guests from the United States, Pakistan, India, Malaysia, and Brazil, along with local campaigners.
Organised by Green Left and Socialist Alliance. Find out more by going to ecosocialism.org.au.
Green Left is a 3CR supporter.
The revolution in Rojava is a beacon of hope for the world, putting direct democracy and feminism into practice on a broad scale. This radical attempt at social transformation now faces huge challenges, including daily attacks by the Turkish military with little outside recognition or aid. Show your support for Rojava by joining Northeast Syria Solidarity, or NESS, and help ensure the survival of this inspiring experiment in social change. NESS sends aid, raises awareness, and builds solidarity. Get involved at www.nesssolidarity.org.au. NESS is a 3CR supporter.
We're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. And I just wanted to say thank you to Riley Breen from Brulu WA for organising that interview. You were listening to Hala Shanable, a Palestinian activist from Brulu, and also Amin Abbas, who is an organiser with Free Palestine Melbourne, and many other things. But if you really enjoyed that interview, that is like a small taste of what you can expect from the upcoming conference, Eco-Socialism Conference. Amin Abbas will be speaking on Palestine, the moral issue of our time session with Adam Hanier, Janet Parker. All right, we're going to play Kay Tempest.
So Kay Tempest is I believe they're Irish, trans poet. And like just amazing wordsmith, so
enjoy.
Arguing with Autobots and scrolling till the boredom stops. Fed on a stream of despair, we despair. Dopamine opinion farm, agreement is knowledge. Rage is a commodity, now prove that you care. Imprisoned in our exhibitionism, is anybody there? Sun's out, off we go, splashing in the med. Still digesting all the bodies it's been fed. Armageddon's nothing new, this moment has its roots in all moments. All days slid here, 300,000 years boiled down to this morning. When the smoke clears, the next species to evolve won't even know we disappeared. Make forever with me now, as long as forever lasts. I know it won't be easy when this slips out of our grasp. Springtime's holding on, but summer's in the grass. Let's break forever down into its separate parts. Forever. I've not got the stomach for space travel. I don't want millionaires to colonize Mars. It'd be nice to address the mess we made here before jetting off to ruin the stars. How can the same lesson repeated through time still be the one we can't learn? Warming our hands on what was holy land, we sit here and watch it all burn. It's hard not to let it affect you. Our screens are all teeming with ghosts. I suppose if you turn up the heat incremental, the flesh won't even notice it roasts. So have forever with me now, and let's make forever last. 'Cause we're going to miss forever when we feel it slipping past. Summer's drinking deep, but autumn wants a glass. I don't want to see this finish, so let's not give it the chance forever.
Scotty, welcome back. You are listening to Green Left Radio. You're on 3CR. We are just coming up at 8 o'clock. And that was Kay Tempest. I erroneously suggested that Kay Tempest is Irish. They are not. Kay Tempest is, in fact, English. And is an amazing spoken word poet and rapper and musician. And that is one of many that... song comes off a recent album by Kay Tempest, and you can find that and a bunch of other radical music at greenleft.org.au, where Matt Ward, who is himself a musician, does a monthly wrap-up of radical music, albums, singles, and yeah, Matt's consistently staying on the pulse of new radical music from around Australia and around the world. Lots of new Koree music Matt is constantly keeping track of and putting it on there. So
protest music. He always has every month 10 new albums, and this month it's 10 new albums that will tell you more about that will tell you more than watching the news. So thanks, Matt Ward. Okay, now it's time for the activist calendar.
Whoa, okay. Mm. So we're starting with Friday, August the 22nd. There will be a discussion, Political Economy of Palestine. There'll be morning coffee with Professor Leila Fasak at 9 a.m. online. And so you can probably find out more information if you use Mrs. Google. Saturday, August the 23rd, picket or boycott or both Caltex, 10 a.m., 71 Murray Road, Preston. Check out Instagram for details. Then the same day, Saturday, August the 23rd, there is a film screening, Gaza, Doctors Under Attack. It starts at 1 p.m. It's at the Box Hill Library, which is at 1040 Whitehorse Road in Box Hill. There's also a fundraiser on that same day, When Woody Met Pete. That's at the Victorian Trades Hall Council, which is at 54 Victoria Street in Carlton. Starts at 3 p.m. and the details are on Facebook. On that same day, so this is still Saturday, August the 23rd, there is a film screening of Palestinians Don't Need Sidewalks, and there is an after-film discussion. The film starts at 4 p.m., at the FOMO Cinema, which is 5 Blue Stone Y in Brunswick East. And there's tickets that you need to get if you want to go and see that one. Moving on to Sunday, August the 24th, there is a convoy, The Great Ride of Return, starting at 11 a.m., starting at corner of Royal Parade and Park Streets in Parkville. And check out Instagram for details. And then there is a rally, a nationwide rally this Sunday, so August the 24th, for Palestine. We want to make this a really big, big, big march. So please come along, encourage others to come along, drag friends and rellos. It starts at 12 p.m. at the State Library, which is on the corner of Swanson Street and what is that, Lonsdale Street, in the city. And there's all sorts of information online if you're not sure. Moving on to Monday, the 25th of August, there is a reading circle, The Political Economy of Palestine, 10 a.m. This time the topic is Monash Whole Foods, and it is at level 1/21 Chancellor's Walk at Monash University, which of course is in Clayton. There is another reading circle, which is The Political Economy of Palestine, at 6 p.m. on that same day, the Institute of Postcolonial Studies, 78 to 80 Curzon Street in North Melbourne. Moving on to Saturday, August the 30th, there is a local rally in Menzies for Palestine. So Menzies is Doncaster, Warrandyte, Templestowe, Bulleen, that area. And it is calling for sanctions on Israel, stop starving Gaza. It starts at 11:30 in Warrandyte, and that'll be on the corner of Webb and Yarra Streets. There are three fabulous speakers. I'm in Abbas the Senior, and he is a Palestinian and also director of Olive Kids, the charity. Then we have Jordi Silverstein from the Loud Jew Collective, and we have Robert Martin, journalist, and he was involved in one of the flotillas as well. Also on Saturday, August the 30th, is a youth workshop in IHRA in the media, 1 p.m. You need to register online. And there is a mutual aid fundraiser called for Palestine, which starts at 1:30 p.m. in Thornbury at the Picture House, 802 High Street. Check out Instagram for details. Sunday, August the 31st.
Yeah, so I would just like to jump in here. So the neo-Nazis are organising what they're calling a rally against mass immigration, and various far-right media channels and scum have been promoting this. It's kind of just like clockwork. Donald Trump gets elected and then neo-Nazis, you know, try and organise street protests again. It's really, like, annoying that we have to put these scum back in their cage, but put them back in their crate, we will. Get them to slither back under their rocks, we will. So they're trying to target the weekly Palestine protests around Australia, including here in Melbourne. They're trying to target the Palestine protest. And they're playing from the fascist playbook of trying to intimidate and attack lefties. That doesn't work if we've got far bigger numbers than them. And I'm confident that we can greatly outnumber them. But it's really important for people to come out next Sunday the 31st. So it's pro-Palestine, anti-fascist, March for an Aboriginal and Multicultural Australia. Bring your kefir, bring your Palestine flag, bring your Koori flag. And that's at 11 a.m. at the State Library next Sunday the 31st. And this is important. Do not turn up at 1 p.m. because the neo-Nazis are trying to capture the space. So we need to get there before them. So we really need everyone at the State Library next Sunday at 11 a.m. And we need a big turnout, because safety in numbers it's a very simple strategy against fascists. We just need a heap of people and we're good. They ain't going to be able to do anything to us.
And then we can go to the Les Thomas fundraiser afterwards.
Yes, John Curtin.
Yeah.
Yep, which starts at 3 p.m. And the John Curtin is at 29 Lygon Street, Carlton. So, Chloe, you think we're running out of time, we should stop there with the calendar?
Yeah, unless there's, one thing I want to mention is Wednesday, September 10th. It's a bit further down the line, but rally, Marybeck for Palestine, 6 p.m. at Coburg Town Hall. There's a student strike happening, walk out of class for Gaza, at 12 p.m. at South Lawn, Melbourne University on Friday, September 12th. And there's a work stop work for Gaza, 12 p.m. State Library on the same day. And Tuesday, September 16th to Thursday, September 18th, there's a direct action Occupy ALP offices at various ALP MP offices.
Oh, and when's Eco-Socialism Conference?
The Friday the 5th to Sunday the 7th. So that's really important to mention too, yes. Where's the venue, Chloe?
Balham Place. That is in Brunswick, and it's around the corner from Brunswick Town Hall. It's a beautiful venue. But more importantly, please check out the amazing lineup of speakers that we're getting from across the Indo-Pacific. Go to ecosocialism.org.au, book your tickets now, and have a look at the agenda. It's a very exciting and packed agenda as well. And as part of this year's Eco-Socialism Conference, we also have an art exhibition on the topic of eco-socialism, not barbarism.
But we also have, apart from all those wonderful speakers from the Asia-Pacific area, isn't Jess Spears, who's speaking on climate, isn't she an Irish?
And also, we're also getting socialists from the US as well. So it's not just Indo-Pacific, it's just, mainly from that region. We're going to go to a quick break. break, and then we'll come back with an interview with Renfrey Clark about this marine disaster in South Australia. So stay tuned for that one.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
Stay tuned, stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources, and we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our lands.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from day one.
It started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now. Step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our lands back. We demand to stop Black Death in custody.
Capitalism's inherent barbarism is on full display, from the genocide in Gaza and the rise of the far right, to growing militarism and the climate crisis.
We need to radically change the way society is organised.
Join us for the upcoming Eco-Socialism 2025 conference, Eco-Socialism, Not Barbarism, held on September 5th to the 7th at the Balam Place in Brunswick.
We will be bringing together activists from across the Indo-Pacific, sharing experiences to resist capitalism's drive to barbarism and build the mass movements that we need.
Anyone who wants to be part of the discussion on how we can build a left-wing alternative is welcome to attend.
Featuring international guests from the United States, Pakistan, India, Malaysia, and Brazil, along with local campaigners.
Organised by Green Left and Socialist Alliance. Find out more by going to ecosocialism.org.au.
Green Left is a 3CR supporter. You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and we are now joined by Renfrey Clark, who is a member of Socialist Alliance and active in the Palestine movement, and also campaigns like Don't Dump on South Australia campaign. Welcome to the show, Renfrey.
Hello, Chloe.
Good morning. You're also here with Zane and Mary.
Hi, Renfrey.
Hey, comrade.
Hi.
Now, Renfrey, we got you on the show because you recently wrote an article in Green Left titled South Australia's Marine Disaster, A Glimpse of the Future. And well, just to start us off, can you give us a bit of an overview of this marine disaster and why it's unprecedented?
Well, it has been a complete catastrophe for South Australia's fisheries, tourism, and so forth. There have been massive die-offs of large numbers of marine species. About 450 species in all have been affected. In a lot of cases, it's been absolutely catastrophic. Now, why has this occurred? As we know, the sea is full of plankton, that is, microorganisms, and usually these exist in a reasonable balance, but if particular changes occur in the environment, then individual species of plankton can grow out of all proportion. And if these have the particular quality of producing toxins, then the damage can be especially great. And that's what's happened in South Australia. The guilty microorganism in this case is known as Karenia bikimoltai. And it's a natural part of the South Australian marine environment. It has these characteristics that it does particularly well in warm conditions. warm, still conditions particularly, and if there are plenty of nutrients, that helps along as well. Now, this is a particularly diabolical organism because it produces a toxin which has the effect of killing marine animals, particularly things like marine worms and so on. That is the benthic organisms, the seafloor organisms that are at the base of the food chain. It does this because it does particularly well amid decaying organic matter. So it creates this decay for itself by killing off elements of the local environment. Now, normally this wouldn't occur on a large scale or persist for long, but things have changed in the South Australian marine environment. Critical thing, it's become much warmer. In the course of 2024 and the first half of 2025, you had exceptionally warm sea conditions, as much as 3 degrees above normal. And in these circumstances, this organism does particularly well. The other thing is that throughout the last 18 months in South Australia, most of it, there's been near-record drought. That means high temperatures, few storms, little mixing of the ocean, temperatures build up, and particular marine microorganisms that are favoured by these conditions proliferate, they do particularly well, their populations build up. This is what's happened with Karenia micimortii. This was first noticed back in March when you found large numbers of marine creatures, things like sharks and rays and skates and so on, washing up on South Australian beaches. And this, this particular microorganism was soon identified as the cause. Now, it's pretty unpleasant to marine mammals as well. If they ingest organisms that have fed on the microorganisms and which have accumulated the toxins, then seals, dolphins, whales can die. And this has been observed happening in South Australia. You've had great white sharks washing up on beaches and seals as well. So it's a thoroughly bad situation. It's exacerbated by the fact that there are plenty of nutrients around at the moment. A big flood on the Murray a couple of years ago has washed nutrients into the marine environment. Also upwellings of cold, nutrient-rich waters from off the continental shelf. So it's a whole constellation of factors which have come together to create this situation. But the point that needs to be made is that this is something which hasn't existed historically. It's exacerbated by rising sea temperatures, and it occurs in the context of a rash of marine heat waves around the world. We've had as much as 96% of the global ocean in the past few years has been affected by marine heat waves. That is, temperatures markedly above normal for prolonged periods. And this is certainly what's occurring in South Australia. So we're going to find that algal blooms like this and the die-offs they cause are going to become more and more frequent in places like South Australia as temperatures rise, as global warming goes ahead. It's the classic tragedy of the commons, where greenhouse gases emitted on the other side of the world are having an effect in South Australia, in places that have nothing in particular to do with the emission of large quantities of carbon dioxide. In fact, South Australia is a place where emissions of carbon dioxide have been cut very radically. But while that's ironic, it doesn't matter that South Australia has been doing it right the fact that outfits like the Trump administration in the United States or the Liberal government in Queensland have been burning coal merrily are enough to cause grief at completely unrelated places around the world.
Well, and of course the federal Labor government is approving lots of new massive coal mines and that massive gas project on the Western Australian coast as well, which will destroy a bunch of Aboriginal rock art along the way. I'd be keen to ask, Renfrey, do you know how prevalent this this marine algae, Karenia mikimotoi, how prevalent is that in other parts of the world? Because I've heard some people saying, you know, what the scary thing about what's happening in South Australia right now is it's a glimpse, as you say, into what can happen elsewhere. Is that algae pretty common around the world, or is it kind of more of a, like, where could we potentially expect to see this sort of thing happen elsewhere?
Basically, in places where water temperatures are relatively elevated and where there are plenty of where there are plenty of nutrients in the water column. And there are many places like this. There have been outbreaks in China particularly. It's had a bad effect on the shellfish industry in China there. But you've also had it particularly in the North Atlantic, outbreaks off Ireland. When you get prolonged warm temperatures and relatively still conditions, as you get during droughts, then this favours the growth of this particular alga, and you get the blooms, you get the emission of toxins, you get the mass die-offs.
Hmm. So I was going to go back to something that you said. You said that emissions in South Australia, or at least in that part of South Australia, had been radically cut. What has been, so what have they done, and what should they be doing now with this disaster?
Well, South Australia is an example of virtue, I suppose, in its greenhouse emissions. Renewables make up 77% of South Australian electricity production, which is an exceptionally high figure, and they're aiming at a net 100% within the next few years. So the irony is that one of the most virtuous localities in terms of emissions has copped it worse. The point is that it doesn't matter so long as emissions are going on at any point around the world, then places like South Australia are perfectly capable of suffering from it. This is a problem of global governance overall. Everywhere, governments need to be taking action to drive down greenhouse emissions. Otherwise, you're going to get global warming accelerating and disasters, tragedies like the current one in South Australia are going to proliferate.
So this South Australian government, sounds like you're saying there's not much more they can do in terms of reducing their own emissions, but perhaps what they should be doing is educating the public why this is happening, and advocating at least for the federal government to do things like not approve the Woodside gas project, or what do you think, Renfrey?
Well, that's certainly the case. South Australia has a Labor government and has a certain input into decisions taken nationally by the federal Labor government, but I haven't noticed Premier Malinauskas making big trouble for the federal government. What the South Australian government is doing, it's putting together a rescue package for fishers who've been badly affected. It's making moves to set up a chain of monitoring stations, and And there's money for further scientific research so that we understand this microorganism better. But the problem is there's not very much that can be done at this level. No government is able to go out and sieve the ocean for this particular offending microorganism. What does need to be done is to publicise the fact that the problem arises out of greenhouse emissions. Mm. Now, South Australia doesn't have a coal lobby. In fact, it doesn't have a coal industry at all. So it's fairly easy for South Australia to be virtuous and to say, we are taking the appropriate steps, we are driving down emissions. But this is not the case nationally. South Australia is, Australia in general, is profiting enormously from the sale of fossil fuels internationally, Australian coal and gas. So for the Australian government to warn about this, for it to berate governments elsewhere for the rise in carbon dioxide pollution is a bit hypocritical because Australia is one of the world's largest retailers of fossil fuels, and hence one of the sources of one of the world's worst carbon problems.
Mm.
Yeah, for people just tuning in, we are speaking with Renfrey Clark from South Australia. He's an anti-war and environmental activist, member of Socialist Alliance. We're talking about the failing of government's climate policy around the world that has brought on a marine disaster unexpectedly to South Australians. Renfrey, we are unfortunately running out of time on the show today, but I guess to just wrap up, do you have any other do you have any concluding comments before we say goodbye?
Well, only that it's the responsibility of the South Australian government to really take this to the feds and say, stop emitting carbon pollution. End the power of the coal lobby. Take action to stop the situation in which Australia is one of the world's greenhouse ogres. It's affecting a particular South Australian state, but it's an international problem, and the Australian government is one of the worst offenders by allowing this to go ahead.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us this morning, Renfrey. Yeah. We always love cheers, having Renfrey. You on the show. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Bye, Renfrey.
Bye.
And that pretty much brings us to the end of the show thereabouts for another week. Stick around for Left After Breakfast, and we will see you at the big Palestine rally on Sunday. And if you're a union member, make sure you bring your union flags and your union shirts.
Yeah, and we want to thank our guests, Renfrey Clark, and also we played an interview about the Caltex, about boycotting Caltex, why you should boycott Caltex, with Riley from Boorloo. And the interviewees were Hala, Shanaible, and Amin Abbas. So thank you to those two comrades as well. We'll see you next week, same time, same place.
This brings us to the end of the show. You have been listening to Friday Morning Breakfast with Green Left Radio, brought to you by Green Left Weekly Newspaper, which brings an alternative source of information that puts people and planet before profit.
If you like our work, become a supporter from $5 per month at greenleft.org.au/support or free call 1800 634 206.
Arise, you workers from your slumbers. Arise, you prisoners of want. For reason in revolt now thunders, and at last ends the age of Khan. Away with all your superstitions, serve all masses,
arise!
We'll change henceforth the old tradition and spurn the dust to win the prize. That's right, the commies are back, reds underneath your beds and that crap.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.